answer a few questions. You heard what I had to say out there, so I won't repeat myself. But let me just, you know, start by saying that it is an unbelievable honor to be nominated by the President of the United States to serve as Secretary of Agriculture. I was honored to get the confirmation from the Senate, and am now fully engaged in being a part of this administration as we seek through or force our way through this last year of heavy activity and a lot of different issues going on. The USDA is a broad-reaching agency, and I'm learning many things every day. I'll try to answer your questions as best I can, but I'm still new on the job, so you'll have to forgive me a little bit. But I do appreciate the effort, and I am proud to lead an agency that is so committed out there to the mission, whose people are actively engaged in delivering the mission of the USDA in a broad range of areas that, as President Lincoln said when he founded the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, is the people's department because it affects so many people's lives in so many different ways. So with that, I'm glad to open up for questions. And yes? Well, I think I'm surprised there are only a couple of new proposals, you know, that are on the table. It's been pretty active in the past few days, and I mentioned I am becoming more and more optimistic that we will see a farm bill put on the table that's agreed to by the three areas of interest here, the administration, the House, and the Senate, and that the President will get something that he is willing to sign. There are several proposals. The USDA has been working on two fronts. There are huge differences between the House and the Senate, and that is an area of big conflict. As we have been working with the Senate on trying to arrive at some understanding between the administration and the Senate, and we've been working with the House. They are working, it's kind of a, you know, triangle, so they're working together to do theirs. So I would guess that the couple of proposals that have been kind of in the news these days are one that we have been working on the House side, which we are closer to agreement on, and we're just starting the work with the Senate side, and there have been some proposals put on the table there. At this point in time, it's a fluid process. We've been suggesting, they've been hearing and suggesting, and vice versa. So it's again, I don't know the specific proposals, but I'm getting more optimistic that we're going to be able to see a farm bill put in place this year. Yes,
Mr. Secretary. As far as the farm bill itself, you've had a chance, obviously, to talk with the President. You heard the President's remarks just a couple of days ago with your swearing in at USDA. Do you believe, in other words, we've heard up to that point from Chuck Conner and others that the White House advisors have recommended a veto, but it sounds like the President has some pretty firm convictions about this himself.
The President does have very firm convictions, and the reason the President has firm convictions is I'm very pleased. He understands agriculture. He's from an agriculture state. He knows what's going on. As governor, you know, he led a state in the agriculture arena. Secondly, his proposals were developed through listening to the people of the United States. 50 listening sessions took place across this country. They weren't you didn't have to have a badge from an organization. You didn't have to be signed up. You could walk up to an open mic and put your views on the table. And, the farmers, ranchers, and landowners across this country developed the proposal that the President put on the table. And he does feel strongly about it. He knows that during this time of economic movement up and down, pretty volatile these days, he doesn't think that raising taxes is a good idea in this country. And frankly, we didn't hear any farmers and ranchers across the country saying, you go out and raise our taxes to spend more money. That just wasn't a proposal that's in place. Reforms are very important. People over and over in this country say, why are we giving tax breaks to the rich? Why are we giving so much to corporate America? Why don't we focus our programs on the people that really need them? And I think that's an important effort and something the president is heartfelt about. So he feels strongly about reforms. The $200,000 adjusted gross income is 2% of the taxpayers in the United States, or the top 2% of the taxpayers in the United States of America today. He thinks those goals are reasonable. And I believe that listening to the people, he said, no new taxes, reform the thing. Those are what I'm strong about. And as we have gone forth in the negotiating process, we're learning how to understand that between the House version, the Senate version, and the administration's proposals. And frankly, it isn't as much as raising taxes as it is spending. I mean, the proposals from the Senate and the House spend too much money. And they're raising revenue taxes to pay for it, and that's not going to happen. Yes. You know, it's a good question because it's one that's out there all, you know, it's, you know, on the face of it, it's a pretty easy question. Do you want, you know, subsidy limits or not? As you delve into it, of course, the mechanics of input costs and depreciation and forms of business and, you know, business enterprises and how they affect farm income and, you know, all those things become a much more integral part in the discussions. I can tell you that my personal discussions with leadership in the House and the Senate have revolved around those issues. I think that we are trying to find ways not to say what the limit is, but what to deliver the policy is. And, you know, if we want to provide reforms, where's the number? Where's the limit? What's the philosophy? What are we trying to do? You know, and as we look at saying, okay, what do we want the public policy to reflect, then I think the number will come in place.
Mr. Secretary, under what circumstances might you release some acres from CRP or allow early out of those acres without penalty, if any?
Another thorny issue. Everything I deal with is a thorny issue. But, there are both sides of that. And certainly from the wildlife standpoint and the conservation standpoint is one issue, and cropping patterns with today's prices is another. We've made the decision this year that we're not going to have any early outs without penalty on CRP. We're trying to, at USDA, you know, consider the issues, look at the situation, and find out what we're going to do next year. Haven't made that decision yet, but just as a directional point, I believe that we've arrived at a point in the ethanol production that's 10-12% of the energy needs. With the current infrastructure in place, that's probably about where we're going to be. That to me tells me that long term we're going to see a leveling or a capping of the corn prices out there and the feed prices. So I think some of the pressure is going to be released on that. Certainly there are CRP acreage that should not be farmed and kept in the program. And we're going to look at it from that direction to see what we'll do next year. But this year we won't be doing any early release without penalty. Yes?
Secretary, you mentioned you were optimistic about a breakthrough in the beef pig in South Korea.
I am. Could I get by with saying you got a new guy in town? that's a good point. There is a new guy in town. As I mentioned in my comments, every day I'm with Ambassador Schwab one way or the other, and I have we met with beef industry leaders last week, and in an effort to bring everybody up to speed with what's going on, and. You know, the trade negotiations are arduous, they're tough, they're difficult, and many, many interests get put in play, including election politics. And what we saw unfold in Korea while we were making progress on allowing the full market penetration of our exported beef in Korea, The national election got involved, and the politics of the old president or the current president and the new president became a factor. And quite frankly, you know, we slowed down and in some cases stopped the negotiations. The new president is committed to free trade. He's mentioned in his public comments that we will be moving forward to open up markets. He's going to be in charge. I think the first legislative assembly there is April 9th, and we're very optimistic that the ministers that we've been dealing with, the levels of appropriate people all the way up to the president, you know, are going to still be there, still be actively engaged. And once the new president is in place, we believe that we can complete this round of trade talks. Yes. That's one of many things I don't know anything about, so I'm going to not answer at this point in time. I just haven't caught up with the issue yet. Sorry. I think you know, certainly the video does damage, which is probably why the Humane Society kept it secret and didn't even tell the agency about it until they released it to the media. You know, it seems to me that. In a working relationship of an organization that is interested in the humane treatment of animals, when they found out that there was a problem or potential problem, the proper track would have come to the USDA, the people responsible for implementing the rules and regulations on humane treatment of animals, and told them about it. What happened since last October is the Humane Society has been willing to let animals suffer out there for this long period of time to, you know, instead of dealing with the issue. It is an isolated issue. It is not one of food safety, but one of treatment of animals. And we're fairly confident that once the shocking views of that video are done and over, that we will still be in a strong position of providing a good, clean, safe food supply, not only in this country, but across the world. We are working on communication efforts to do that, public service announcements, things that we will be actively involved with from USDA, training bulletins, extension service delivery, those to prepare the message that this is not acceptable. It is not the way that we want to operate. I know it's not the way that the beef industry wants to operate, and we take it very seriously. The plant's been shut down. There's criminal investigation going on. And we will take the appropriate responses to the information that we find. You know, I just think that it's a factor. People are going to be wondering what the issue is, but as we see it unfold, there is no apparent health risk here. It's one of treatment of animals, and it's one that we will correct and focus the mission of USDA, which is to deliver the humane treatment of animals as we see them move into our food supply.
Has the agency had any dialogue with the many school districts that quit serving beef during this investigation?
We have had dialogue with the school districts, and we've had dialogue with many senators on behalf of their school districts. And you know, it's an issue of concern where we put on hold. The retail beef that resulted from that maybe one incident or maybe ongoing practice from that facility has moved through the system. The school lunch, you know, beef has been stored in places and maybe some around. We identified that, captured it, and said it will not be moved. So, the schools are safe. A lot of schools went beyond saying the beef from this particular plant should be put on hold and held all meat. You know, that's just not what we asked for. You know, we asked for one incident here, and we're going to be doing everything we can. I read a letter from a beef organization this morning, wondering about that, and I made a note on it. You know, how are we going to communicate with schools? But we'll be reaching out to the schools and assuring them that through the USDA, employees, inspection services, that we will be providing good quality, safe beef to the school lunch program. Well, we haven't changed any. We've had a lot of discussion about it, and of course, I'm new, and so I'm asking, you know, do we rotate inspectors? Do we, you know, do they take a walk around the yard once in a while, or are they so focused on their job that they can't do anything else? Do they, you know, do they build relationships with the people that are there, or are they, you know, true arm's length inspectors? How, you know, how does that all work? And we've had some good discussions in the agency about you know, how our inspectors operate in the plants. And while our resources are tight and our employees you know, are stretched, I am confident that the inspection services are dealing with this properly, that have the capacity and the ability to make sure that our production houses out there operate properly. Yes. Well, you know, I'm finding an interesting change in my life. Not only have I become Secretary of Agriculture, but I'm moving out of being a North Dakotan and into a citizen of the United States. And what I mean by that is I had certain viewpoints of things that when I was governor of North Dakota, like importation of hogs or meats or processed foods or whatever it might be, wheat, you know, certain things as governor, you know, I felt strongly about and did what I thought were appropriate actions and necessary directions from the governor's office to support our industry. As I have moved into the Secretary of Agriculture's position, I'm finding, you know, a more national scope and, in fact, an international scope. What might be an incidence of something that affects North Dakota hog trade, affects Mexican hog trade, affects our exports of beef and soybeans and you know, many other things. So, as the looking at the broader picture, what I can assure you I will bring into this agency is an honest and fair look at the global perspective and the long-term aspects of trade agreements. People in my state are not happy about free trade. They don't like it. They don't think it's a good idea. They think it hurts their pocketbook and their ability to, you know, live and work in the areas that they want to live and work in. The long-term view, in my opinion, is going to provide better opportunities, bigger markets, and the ability for farmers and ranchers to make better livings. And that's what the trade agreements are all about. So as an overriding issue, that's how we'll be approaching our trade agreements. And certainly trade agreements that are in place are not going to be renegotiated or opened up or changed as we go forward.
In your meetings with Ambassador Swan, Mr. Secretary, any discussions on WTO and the feeling of whether that is going to happen or not?
Yes, we have had several discussions about WTO, and the Doha round, as I mentioned in my comments, is very important. And we have reason to believe that while there's been kind of a period here of disagreement and really the slowdown of the process, it's starting to accelerate again. I think there's been some big commitments to trying to break some of the barriers away and get it done in place. The ambassador, in my conversations with her, is seeing doors open up, seeing countries talking to each other about issues where they wouldn't have 4 months ago, 6 months ago, and as there are some keys of, you know, Korean beef trade accepting OIE full responsibility of that country, as we see, you know, that move into the Japan negotiations, into some Argentinian issues, the momentum is starting to open up in Doha, and you know, I'm not that familiar with it, but the Ambassador Schwab, I can tell you, is increasingly optimistic that this year we can complete the Doha round.
Are you ready to implement country of origin labeling?
You know, when I was governor, that was an issue in North Dakota. And while we couldn't get a strict law passed, we did pass a voluntary law of origin. I, you know, it started, I was I was at the International Peace Gardens, which is a presentation by the U.S. government and the Canadian government on the border of North Dakota. With, you know, it's a botanical gardens, but it's a, you know, it's an effort to bring our two countries together. I was up there, and I was buying, you know, that good Macintosh toffee or whatever it is you get from Canada, and it says made in Canada on it, you know, and I went into the legislative session. I said, I'm buying all this candy and food and everything that the Canadians are proud of having their name on, but they don't want their name on, you know, beef products. So we passed a law that was voluntary in North Dakota without penalty, but just, you know, as a signal that that we believed in, and I believe that that we ought to see labeling. As that's worked through the process, you know, we're on a hold until October of this year. In October of this year, the USDA is fully prepared to deliver the law, the public policy that's set forth by Congress to deliver the cool labeling.
So you have two laws on the books in case this one doesn't get through the Farm Bill?
Well, I can't say we have that. But, you know, again, our role is not to set public policy. Our role is to deliver public policy. And I'm convinced that USDA will deliver the policy that's set forth, whether it's, you know, another extension, whether it is the requirement to provide the labeling, whatever it is, we're going to do the job.
Mr. Secretary, one more quick question on Japan, if I can.
Yes.
Would you accept, or is there a possibility that we could take a stair-step approach to resuming beef trade with them, saying, okay, we'll send you 30-month beef, and then on condition maybe we'll get OIE full acceptance later?
No.
Thank you.
Question about, has the Bush administration looked at all or talked at all about repealing the renewable fuel standard or relaxing it because of what's happening in grain markets and the subsequent pressure that it's putting on cattle producers, because there was some reports this week that may have been the case?
I can't say yes or no. I have not heard those conversations. In any of the discussions I've been with the president or his advisors or our Farm Bill negotiating team, would be a natural place for this kind of thing to come up, it hasn't come up on my radar screen, so I can't say that.
As a secretary, would you support something like that?
I'm not sure. I can see some merits in it. On the other hand, I'm one that I tend not to look back. I tend to look forward. And when we have, when we've initiated a public policy, it's going in this direction. I'd rather find out ways to make it work than trying to, you know, step it back. I'm assuming that the proper public input was in place, the proper public need was considered, and public policy was direction was put there. And if there are bumps in the system, we need to figure out how to make it work. But relaxing the standards or changing them, I don't think, is the way to go.
Are you going to make any sweeping staff changes in your...
No. It's become real apparent, and I was told over and over again during the confirmation progress that the USDA is the best agency out there, that it's run the best, that it has a mature and committed and hardworking staff, And while certainly there are constituents disagreements and, you know, problems, this and that, you know, overall that agency is just superb. And as I've gotten in there, I have been thrilled to be able to work side by side with Chuck Connor, who is committed to staying through the end of the administration. And Dale Moore, the chief, is superb. And, you know, I've, in a very short time, bonded is the right word, with the leadership group at USDA, and if there will be any changes at all, they'll be minor. Yes?
Any working groups or any plans at this point that you've been working on to implement the 49 farm law, if all else fails?
The 49 law, while may be a negotiating tactic, will not be implemented. It has two huge ramifications on, you know, the price of milk and other commodities, on systems, on nutrition, food stamps, women's infants and children. It's not going to happen. Congress won't let it happen. We won't take care of people properly in this country if we revert to the 49 law. What I know of the commitment of the public servants in Washington, D.C., it isn't going to happen. So we're not going to spend any time on it.
Does that that mean the president won't veto it then?
That does not mean the president won't veto it. I think the president is very clear that he will veto the bill if it contains tax increases, if it doesn't contain the reforms that he's looking for. He's been, I don't think there's a question about, you know, about his direction.
Interesting.
Yes.
You mentioned earlier that the president feels like there's too much spending in the bills proposed by both the House and Senate, yet his own version is above baseline. Can you explain that?
I can. I think that the president understands the need to increase some program spending in the bill. There's increased spending in there for bioenergy. There's increased spending in there for conservation. There is increased spending in there for specialty crops, things that are important to the people of this country. And he was willing to scare up $4.5 billion to put on the table without raising taxes to increase spending in the farm bill. You can score these things in all different ways, but so it's, say, if the president's if you can read it, $3.5 billion, $4.4 billion, you know, all these kinds of things. But say you have $3.5 billion, that was the president's first baseline, and you have $36 billion, which is the scoring on the Senate's line. You know, that's a lot of increased spending. The president was willing to go a certain amount for needed increases in important programs. He's not willing to go on a spending spree here that is spending the taxpayers' dollars in areas where we don't think we need them. No, the president's message is we need to focus the limited dollars to important and priority programs delivered by the Farm Bill. The president has a mission to provide the direction for a balanced budget in 2012. He's committed to doing so, and he's charged the agencies to putting together budgets to do so. As that unfolds, I've been through a process with that myself, and what I found important, because North Dakota has a constitutional balanced budget amendment that forces us to balance the budget, what became important to us in North Dakota was that, you know, the taxpayers don't have all the money in the world. I mean, they give us limited resources, and to spend properly, you focus on priority programs. And the president is saying, focus on the priority programs and focus on them in such to where we don't have to raise taxes to get the job done. Yes?
Are you satisfied with the progress being made in privacy identification?
I don't know enough about it yet. You know, if we're at 400 and some thousand premises out of 1.4 million, it seems to me we have a way to go. I'm not sure of all the factors that, you know, have come to play. And you know, I've seen some of the issues there, even to the point of, you know, are we not allowing 4-H kids to take their animal, you know, to show at the 4-H fair because the premise isn't registered? You know, there are some issues there. But, you know, I think it's important to get them done, and certainly I'd like to see more than the 400,000+ that we have. But we have ways to go, and we're going to be pushing out there to get it done. And as I encourage everybody out there, this is the year to sign up. You know, I'm not a big mandatory person. You know, I think good public policy delivers, you know, good direction. And if people understand the why and the need, and you can take some of the emotion out of it, the direction is we should put together the right program that people want to enroll in, not that because they have to.
Two more questions, please.
Yes.
I believe you're scheduled to speak in the next day or two. I would like to see an extension of the 2002 farm program. What's going to be your message to them?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm certainly going to wear a cotton shirt. you know, the message is the president has put forth a responsible farm bill. We have, as an administration, taken the lessons that we heard from the people and put it in place. The big issue with the cotton growers, of course, is, you know, are we going to limit subsidy payments for a high-value crop that's grown on, you know, small acreage? And that's an important issue. Input costs are a huge thing there. But I believe that while the president has recommended limiting subsidies to the top 2% of the taxpayers in the United States, he's also said, you know, let's put the money where you need it. And in talking to the cotton growers, their issues are important. Their vision about where you need to put the money, where it needs to be, will be taken into consideration. And certainly one of the contentious issues between the House and the Senate and the administration on the Farm Bill are those subsidy limits. We want to understand what their concerns are. We understand what they are trying to say and what they need to operate their agribusiness. But we also want them to understand that the government and the taxpayers' money, the people's money, is not there to support the wealthy and the able and the capable. It is there to support the people who need help. And that is what the and that's what the subsidies are all about.
Do you have any opinions regarding the, I guess, pending Packer ban legislation or the amendments to the Packer Farm Bureau Act?
I don't. You know, I had a briefing on that for the Senate hearing, and that's about as deep as I've gotten involved in the thing to date.
Is there any serious dialogue in committee?
In which committee?
In the conference committee?
I don't know. I can't say where the seriousness of the dialogue has been. It's not been at the levels I've been, you know, working with. There are conference committees going on every day, and we have people in those committees. Collectively, I haven't heard what the discussions are on that, so I'm not in a position to say.
You're pretty much a free market supporter.
I'm a free market guy. I'm a supply-side economist. Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Thank you.